that work as you believe. You can't believe that once you're affected by a certain emotion, if you can't believe that once a person is affected by a certain emotion, then this can distort all of his beliefs. Is that what you're saying? I don't know if you can't believe. It's right there in front of you. So what are you going to do with the story? What are you going to do?
Well, I don't think you know. I don't think you can criticize it because I can't reconcile the story. In other words, I'm just saying. I'm not saying that I have an alternative explanation. I'm just saying it's difficult.
I know what you mean. What, I'm not sure what you're saying. What is difficult? What is difficult? The fact that people distort the reality. This is something which you see throughout the wilderness. That people distort the reality. People can distort the clearest possible thing. You think it's all right in the world. People can distort virtually anything under the pressure of emotions and what they want at the moment. And the lying, they could lie.
Yeah, but that's because currently, I mean, they have an ability to deny what's going on around them.
So why can't they deny this? This is abstract. This is completely abstract. The idea is the proper philosophical conclusion from studying the Makos and so on and so forth is something which is easy to deny. You can always I don't know what else to say. You seem to be implying that there's an impossibility that people that went through this could come to these kinds of conclusions. But I don't agree. I mean, you see, it's clear. All right. Well, let's discuss it privately. Let's go back here. Yeah, so what else? If you take a look at how the story unfolds, they're very clever and spies. The way they manipulated people. It seems to me that they operated in two phases. When they came back, this is in Yud Gimel. What is it, Yud Gimel? Chav Zayin? Yeah, they were pretty clever in the way they tried to seduce people. See, Chav Zayin, they came back and they showed them the spaces of the Dover, the Eskaleda, and they showed them the fruit of the land. Then they said, Banu, you see how they start off in a positive light. So they affirmed that it was Zavah called the Vash. Which, you see, because in order to deceive someone, to distort, it's always more effective at the outset. You appear like you're against it. If you come off as clear from the outset that you're opposed, then you have less credibility. So they started off by affirming. Yeah, the Gamza was a FSTIAZAR. See, now the word FS is very significant. The Ramban says that therein lies the chait. But the word FS implies that it's all for nothing. Not just simply however. But FS means nothing. Sometimes it's more effective if you make the point by just communicating a certain attitude about the whole situation. That's one of the tools that they employ. Just communicate a certain attitude rather than going into lengthy explanations, so to speak, the body language. The Azam Amma Yoshev Bara. Basically, they were saying over there that it's possible. That the inhabitants of the land are very powerful, the armed Kuros, the Dolos, the Nos. The city, very huge, fortified, but down to be very high, not the Musha. Alright? That's the Yabite Ha'anak. So that also creates a sense of fear, giant, gigantic people. Then the Amalek Yoshev, the Kani, Amalek. And they mention these nations, which were intended to evoke. Siraji says, well, Misha Nifkut Amalek Shvav. It's Yerub, Maracha. Today, the Yera. So the whole purpose of the miracle was to induce fear in them. Then you see in Pasuk Lamed something interesting happens. By Yaav Kareh Devaram. So Kareh began to kill, so to speak, like the Shushnah. So at this point in time, you have to assume that, you know, you can get a sense of people starting to grumble and murmur, you know, like there's sort of an outbreak of fear. You could sense it. So it was important not to let that go too far. He wanted to state Kareh and Yeshua didn't know what the Marat was going to report. But Yomar Olo Nala the Arashu also. He tried to offset the effect of their words. Hello?
Yeah.
He tried to offset the effect of their words. Yeah, like a positive statement. Hello, now I'm going to be a rational thought. Yochol Nuchola. He wanted to present them with a whole different attitude. Okay? So this would be the end of phase one. The phase one was they had two reports, conflicting reports. The report of the Maragrim was designed to arouse their fear and get them into a sort of a state of irrational thinking, of panic. Then Kohei senses that, and he quiets them down, and he gives them a finale, rallies them, not because he wanted to make his point before it's too late. And once he gets past a certain point, people are always going to listen to him. He shushed them. So what happened next? The Anashim Asher Olu Imo, and the men that went up with him, Amru, Lo Nuchal Elam, so they contradicted, Lo, we can't. Because they're Kominel, but the 2,000 club. By Rosiu, Ibas, the Ores, the Jatayo, also, of the Negus for Elamar, Ores, the Shavaru, Balosa, also, Eric, Ochel, Yoshven, the Chola, Omar, Shavarino, the Torah, and Kirida, the Shavarino, the Sanatilim, the Nea Nuts, and the Nepilim, by the Ebi, Amina, Kachazavim, the Chain, Amina, the Amen. What did they do in the second phase of the report? There were two phases. There was a The way it worked was first there was the initial report of the Maragrim, then you had the counter of the counter report of Kalev, that's phase one. Then you had the second attack, so to speak, of the Maragrim. And this was successful because the answer that's what the spell, but she took all eight by using a colour by Yisku or up by way of Aru. That's an important thing. Chazal say that was the night which was designated. That was like a Tisha B'Av. That was the night that was designated for punishment. All the tragedies occurred. This is the old fact of year. Bechir. As God said, they cried Bechir Shalchinim. All the elders there were Bechir, which is, for something significant. This is just in their imagination. They allowed their imagination to gain complete control over them. But what was the... What was the thing which really killed them over here? It seems to me that the essence, the faith of the Maragrim in essence, is really a debunk, mostly a debunk, working around. And I'll explain how it's working around. I'll ask about that question in a minute. But you wouldn't think that was the case. You would think that the case was essentially a rebellion. Rebellion which was induced by fear. The fact that they allowed their fear to overcome them and therefore to negate the Tzibur Hashem, going to the land. However, the way their fate is described is always, you see, the Motzi Yeshiva. And later on, when they're punished, when they're killed, what does it say? How does the Pasuk refer to them? Bayamusu? You have that, Pasuk? Bayamusu Anoshim? This is in Yudal Ramad Zayin. Bayamusu Anoshim? Moshiye Jibas Arad Ra. Now, I guess, in describing their death, and refers to them as the Moshe Givata Haaretz Rav. Those who brought forth a daily report about the land. But as see, in the first days, when they first spoke, they didn't negate the land. They spoke highly of the land. They said, "Zelot Kol Lidrash," and was that period, and so forth. And then they sought to operate by effort. Yeah, it's a very nice land. The only thing is that there's no way we can conquer it. There was an overestimation of the people that lived there. Then you had the opposing point of view of color. So that sort of routine, and that sort of, put some type of a control over the panel. Then they came in and they undermined the land. Then they put out the depot. Because central to the whole thing was the attachment to the land. That if there was a very strong attachment to the land, that this is a good land, that attachment would enable them to summon the courage. But once they destroyed that, by innuendo, there was a lot of innuendo, because they were saying that it's a land which consumes it in heaven. And so you had these giants. They use all types of innuendo. The Chazal say that they said there's a lot of funerals, people are dying, whatever. It wasn't a rational kind of a presentation, but it was intended to create a certain effect that there's something wrong with the plan. And to the effect that either you're a tremendous giant, which is like a freakish kind of thing, or else there's a lot of funerals. However the case may be, that was the debar of the land. Once they did that, so then you see that the people were completely destroyed. Then they were that night that they cried on that night. Then by Yerema Moshe. So the whole thing originated in the fact that they needed to see for themselves. That they couldn't rely on the promise of God that it was a good land, that it was Zelot Kol Lidrash. And once they did that, they put themselves in a very vulnerable situation. So that's why the essential faith was really the faith of Zipa. Now, as far as the question is concerned, a lot of that question is what? Well, what's the question? Why about Lashon Hara?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
How do you think Lashon Hara gets the land?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You're right about that. This is considered to be Lashon Hara. And the Chazal say that's why the story of Miriam comes right before the story of the miracle. It's a juxtaposition. To make the point that these Rishayim, they saw that Miriam was punished for Lashon Hara, and they should have learned, and they didn't learn. Again, I mean, that reinforces the idea that their essential faith was Lashon Hara. Yeah, but I had this question many years ago. We associate Lashon Hara, always talking about a person, the meaning of another individual. But in one way or another, you're harming that person's reputation, whatever the case may be. But a person wouldn't associate Lashon Hara, the fate of Lashon Hara, when you speak badly about a land, say, inanimate object. So it's not in that realm. It doesn't have any effect on it. All right, so let me convey to you a pshat that Rabbi Tate explained it. It's a very important facility in understanding Lashon Hara. And that is that, of course, there's two elements in Lashon Hara. One is the effect that it has on the person you're speaking about. Mm-hmm. But that's not the essence. The essence of Lashon Hara is really the evil that you're doing to yourself. And essentially, by the way, many, many years ago, and just again, I have to always remind them, say as I understand it, my own words. What's that? Yeah. That In Lashon Hara, you're guilty of Lashon Hara even if the facts you're telling are true. I think everybody knows that. Because essentially, what a person is doing in Lashon Hara is really to take those facts and to put a certain spin on them in order to distort. You see, so even when you're mentioning true things about another person, but what you're doing is, obviously, you know, you're just isolating certain truths in order to create a certain impression, which is a distortion, to give that person a certain faulty image. Now, what's the mechanism behind it? Why do people talk Lashon Hara? It's an important thing to understand, especially if you're trying to overcome it. And really, the Chazal say that kol hapotel mumo hapotel, that when a person speaks ill, when he distorts other people, poke fun at them, whatever it is, it's always mumo. You basically, there's a very powerful motivation. You see, that's one of the hardest things to control. There's a very powerful motivation. People derive a tremendous amount of enough. So you can learn a lot about yourself, or a person can learn about himself, from the type of Lashon Hara that he engages in. Or, you know, sometimes people are always looking for a certain type of a flaw. Projecting a certain type of a flaw. Now, basically, what Chazal is saying is that it's always mumo. That the reason why he's projecting the flaw is because he partakes of it himself, and he really can't confront it. He can't confront it in his own self. So it's really a mechanism of denial, and it's a psychological mechanism that by projecting it and criticizing it in others, he therefore is able to free himself from the obligation to confront it in himself. So therefore, therefore the essence of Lashon Hara is to distort the nature of something which is external to yourself in order to avoid having to face up to a problem with yourself. Now, if that's the case, so then it could even be a battle end. Because you see the same mechanism over here, that the Naraglam was confronted with a certain type of a situation, a certain type of a problem. And the truth is that it was a defect in them, that they were overcome by fear. They were overcome by fear. So what did they have done? I think I said last week, the fact that they were overcome by fear is not itself a fake. Sometimes you can't help yourself. I mean, you're in a situation and that's the emotion. It's sort of involuntary. However, what they needed to do, what a person always can do, is to be honest and to recognize the state that he's in. Had they done that, then there wouldn't have been no chase. They could have simply returned and spoken to Moshe privately and told him that, you have to send somebody else. We can't do this. We're in an irrational state. But rather than acknowledge that, they distorted the land. No, the problem is not us, the problem is the land. So that's the mechanism of Lashon Hara. The mechanism of Lashon Hara is to distort the nature of something in the world, an object, whether it's a person or not, in order to disguise and to deny an emotional defect that you perceive within yourself. So that shows the analogy for the case of Miriam, that they didn't learn. They should have learned, they should have studied, they should have understood, and if they had a better understanding, then it could have saved them. Alright? Anything else? Guys?
Yeah.
Anybody there?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay. Alright, so any other questions? Just quickly, I'm not going to take up a whole other area now.
Right.
If there's any, this question, is that a brief?
I think so.
All right. Okay, so.